Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cried the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance.
Hello, my freaky darling, and welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Ferlinghetti, Kerouac, and Morrison, then you are on the right night. But please check out our other After Midnight shows. Join Neutron and Captain as the After Midnight Bombers tomorrow. On Thursday, delve into a world of strange magic with incoherent dust. And Friday's a split between crawling into the darkness of Pan and break on through. And Saturday, join Aphasiana and Babla as they teach you the fine art of part sinner, part saint. And then on Monday morning, check into Mistress Frost and Mr. M as they bring you Black Lace Diary. Now, these shows are designed so you can color outside the lines with rich, raw emotions tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. So, pull up a chair, relax, and open your mind. I'm Rex, my co-host Pam Ray, and I can't wait to get into your words. Hey, Pam.
Hey, Rex. Always good to hear you. How's it going?
All righty.
Awesome. I really like the way you just put all the shows out there. I think that's a really awesome thing that you do. Just a friendly reminder that Strange Magic is every other Thursday, and that Sundays do, or Mondays still also include Hearts of LNP and Black Lace Diaries.
Okay.
I know. Don't you just love the way I keep giving you different things to switch up in your spiel? And you got a lot to keep track of.
Yeah,
and right? Right. But I have to say I'm looking forward to tonight's show. I like when we get a mix up of, you know, I'm looking forward to always hanging out with you and hopefully maybe some other cool poets. But, you know, the first part of our show will be carryovers from the contest you ran with Norman Mailer quotes. And then after that, we will have poems inspired by the Misty Poets movement. And we also have a SoundCloud that you did of one of your poems. So, of course, you know, I'm definitely looking forward to hearing that. And, you know, it's going to be a really great show and all that fun stuff. So, and I hear mice in my wall. What was that?
Well, if you keep leaving cheese out, they'll be coming.
I don't share my cheese. I, like, keep it all to myself.
Well, white wine they're after.
Yeah, no, what it is it's different things. It's, first of all, the dog food. They freaking love dog food. And second of all, it's that hunter, that deer corn that you know, my roommate uses to just, well, obviously, go hunting with or something. I don't know, but that's all I say. But we bought more traps, so instead of having just one trap for all the rooms, we've got like a one trap per room. So I'm hoping now the odds are now in our favor, and all that fun. Yeah. Anyways, but I have to say. Now, have you actually ever heard of the Misty Poets?
Nope.
Okay. Well, I happen to stumble across them by accident because a lot of times when I'm looking for contest prompts, I'll actually Google, like, poetry movements. And I came across them, and I really like their poetry, so I put a few of them up in a contest. And me, I put a picture that has some of the main part ideas about them is that they were around from, they're a group of Chinese poets that were around from 1979 to 1989. They were influenced by Western ideas, challenged Maoist ideas. Their poetry almost oftentimes commented on political and social issues. They celebrated individuality. They often wrote using obscure images. And many were actually exiled after
Tiananmen Square.
Yes, that's it, in 1989. So there's just some little fun facts to know.
Yep.
And I highly recommend it. What's that?
That stuff was dubbed Menglong Shi, hazy or misty,
yes.
Obscure.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. That's correct. And I highly recommend that anybody who hasn't, make sure to check out their poetry. It's really intriguing. But we are going to start the show out with, as I said, carryovers from the Norman Mailer contest. And up first we have Omnipresent Offers Inherent Powers by Brunda Van Tanda. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
Omnipresent Offers Inherent Powers by Brunda Van Tanda. One's philosophy differs from another, one definition not universally proper. Opinion of philosopher on profession, openly cited under no free quotation. Offering four names of noble professions, open and poetic opinion with suggestions. Only very talented persons can be novelists, oversmart person can do lawyer's duty. Operations conducted by competent surgeon, one whose hand shakes, he can't do operations. One becomes journalist by hit for above three. Opinion of the journalist having expressions free. On one fundamental right, the freedom of speech. One journalist absolutely fit with journalism teach. Omnipresent offers inherent powers, who be what. Only we proposes, but Lord disposes totally real fact. And boom.
Great read there, Rex.
Great read.
And what was that?
I hear myself. Okay. So he wrote to prompt three, which was, if
you
a person is not
novelist, or a lawyer, doctor, ends up being journalist, because the handshake and doesn't have the willpower nor the knowledge to do any of the other three, something along that line.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Did you want me to comment?
Yes.
Okay, so I really like this. First of all, I like that he started every line with an O word. There's something like, you know, you like just want to go, or like, you know, the sound of the You know, there's something very musical and catchy about starting with the letter O, and very almost meditative. I like how he says, offering four names of noble professions, open and poetic opinion with suggestions, only very talented person can be novelist, or smart person can do the lawyer's duty. I felt there was kind of in those last couple lines of that stanza, there was a bit of humor that I enjoyed. But I also like that he says, open and poetic opinions with suggestion, like the whole idea that, you know, this is just a suggested opinion. You know, it's not a fact. I thought this was a wonderful, thought-provoking poem, and the idea that he kind of offers up a story where, you know, he offers up each one of those kind of men, you know, that the one becomes journalist if unfit for above three, opinion of journalists having his expressions free. And I thought that was really cool the way he mentioned the freedom of expression. And as usual, Brunda Van has a wonderful way of adding spirituality into his rites. And he reminds us that it doesn't matter which one of these professions that you go into or what your opinion is of any one of these professions or people who go into them, but, you know, that we all have to remember that there is that you know, he reminds us of an inherent power that is above us all, no matter what. So I thought that was a really nice spiritual touch, and just a clever write with a whole lot of O's. So very well done.
Yeah, I think that omnipresent angle hits on the notice sort and off his inherent powers. But he does hit on one thing, that third stanza, opinion of journalists having his expression free. That is just it. Journalism, the term here is he's offering up journalism, doesn't offer up what journalism is supposed to offer up, which is the truth as to what is going on. Rather, they've all become opinion-minded individuals instead of giving out the truth and let it be disseminated to the masses. They offer up their opinions as truth. And thereby, they are not journalists any longer. But he kind of hits that with last line too. Only we proposes, but Lord disposes total real factories. And hitting at the fact that even with that freedom, journalism has taken a tad loose thought to reality and fact these days.
That's a really great observation there, Rex. And I like how you brought up and remind us that oftentimes journalism nowadays is based on that loose idea of reality. So really great observation and comment there.
Well, it used to be they had to get they had a story. They had to have it verified by one individual, then verified by a separate second and different apart from where they got it from in the first place. And then they back it up with a third to make sure they were on the right track before they printed the story. Now they just write.
Yep. Yep, exactly. Exactly. Very true.
And it was always that underlying notation in journalism, do no harm. Yeah, that went out the window.
Right. Right, exactly. It was kind of like the whole idea of the Star Trek Enterprise, or even, and I know that was a silly comparison, but, you know, it's like people who film nature, like you watch those nature shows, you know, and you're just there to show people the facts. And, yeah, it, you know, as you mentioned, that, you know, nowadays it's about sensationalism, you know, more than as, you know, the mentioned facts. So, yep, definitely a great thought-provoking write that Bruin the Band Panda has provided for us, and very cool. All right. And up next we have Missing Voices by Michael McDermott. And it goes like this. Reading from my bountiful book of poems, transcribed deliberations from inside my head. Some deem that these offerings lack familiarity. Should I relate to my heart's voice instead? Lup-dub, 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 whoosh. This furry chant echoes from artery to vein. My body strives to relate with its precious flesh. As while blood flows, love can be maintained. Established poets will share winning themes that float universally, never to pick sides. Their majestic muses, one-way route is circular, which leaves truth ambitions nowhere to hide. End poem.
Great read, Pam. I like the question in that opening stanza. Some deem that these offerings lack familiarity. Should I relate to my heart's voice instead? Sometimes, if your mind chooses that voice in the meantime. But no, you're right. What comes through fruition in the moment, the thought within that second stanza kind of hits on that notice, that question itself. But the last stanza kind of brings it back on home. You get established posts will share winning themes. Best Look Universe will never pick sides. Majestic News one-way route is circular.
All right. Well, I see Rex dropped in the middle of a comment, so I'm going to go ahead and call him back right onto the show. So here we go. I just have to not say his number out loud because that would not be good. All right, and here we go.
You really got to stop putting that.
You really got to try to stop jumping out the window. Jeez.
I don't touch no buttons. That's why I don't have a mute.
I'm not touching any buttons either. I think it's a studio thing. All right, but let's see. Go ahead and continue on with your comments.
Well, actually, I just finished.
Oh, you did? Okay. I wasn't quite sure. It seemed like you were at the end, but then I thought, gee, he's awfully quiet. I really like that he wrote the prompt. Sentimentality is the emotional promiscuity of those who have no sentiment. I like what you had to say about the first stanza about, and I'm slightly paraphrasing here, but you write with what comes to you in the moment. Like, to me, it felt like you were saying you don't worry about what other people think. You know, and there really is, to me, that kind of self-doubt that comes with any poet, especially the more you start to hear other people's opinions over and over again. And I like that he went with the beating of the heart, the sound of the heart in that first line of the second stanza, and then put in the whoosh. It's almost like it's a heart murmur. That's what I felt like it represented, was that whole idea of that, you know, the murmur of a heart that just isn't quite working right. And as you might have been able to tell, I actually at first thought that word wow was white, and I thought, oh, I was starting to think, oh, that's really creative, and then it's like, oh, wait, no, that's, you know. And I really like, as while blood flows, love can be maintained, which I think is intriguing. It's a thought-provoking line that I think offers up that idea of, you know, love is that gift, that blessing that, you know, is ours while we walk this earth. I also like how he ends this, which leaves truth's ambitions nowhere to hide. To me, that makes a really strong point. I mean, this is just my thought on that, how we as poets and writers and even artists can expose truth, you know, can expose the ambitions of the good and the wicked, and put it right out there. And even it, we can expose parts of ourselves, our hearts, our ambitions, you know, the people, the layers we are beneath the poetry is exposed. And I think that's just really just a really thoughtful write and very well done.
Well said.
Thank you, Mr. Bounce.
What we got next?
I'm going to start making my rap name The Bouncer. Pam The Bouncer Ray. All right. Because I bounce them when I don't like them. Mm-hmm. All right. Okay, I'll stop. All right. Up next, we have My Own Worst Enemy by Lafayette. And go ahead and give that a read, please, Rex.
My Own Worst Enemy by, I'm going to go with the spelling, Lafayette. Tired, the maple tree seed flow of blood down the air, down and down, round and round. Only one destination, no matter the efforts or flair. Singular discussion becomes a very familiar sound. Once accepted, a torturous soul is turned on itself. Mirrored and mirrored, carnivorous and carnivorous. Shameless to feel love shriveled, eternally gone any hope of health. In past, was I ever breathless? Proficiency grows like a baby's love, cold love bucks that lashes out. Poison essence ebbs through arteries and veins, completing their work. The heart knows best how to wound and flail like a priest so devout. When words internally heard ring so true and so dear, cut so profound. Now an end to my wail. My heart is mine enemy. Secrets and truths her cocktail. Only my death will I find her remedy. And poem. And it took harsh words live in the dungeon of the heart. What you got for my own worst enemy?
Well, first of all, great read. I really like the way this flows. I mean, the use of repetition and repetition that has, what do you call that? When with the same sound, I'm suddenly blanking out. It's the stuff that Afasiana really likes. Well, when letters have the same sound.
Alliteration,
That's it. Yes. I thought that was really good. Like where he says, down and down, round and round, only one destination, no matter the efforts of for flair, singular discussion, becomes a very familiar sound. And I like that because it works on two levels. It works on the idea of people who don't understand your situation and give you the same advice over and over again. But it also works on the level of when you have the same thoughts, the same pounding thoughts over and over again. I also like where he's mirrored and mirrored, carnivorous and carnivorous. There's a real sense of destruction throughout. And the heart knows best how to wound and flail like a priest so devout. There's this real idea of self-punishment, self-hate. And he wraps up really nicely. I find it really kind of intriguing how he has the first three stanzas like in a long line format and then goes to the shorter line. And I think in the last, and that kind of becomes almost like a more matter of fact, because as he says at the end, now an end to my wail, my heart is mine enemy, secrets and truths her cocktail, only my death will I find a remedy. And the short, concise lines really come across as someone who's come to a realization that there is no more room for any other thought, but simply that they are their own worst enemy, and their death is the only answer to saving their sanity. So just really a wonderful write and very well done. And I'm looking forward to what you have to say, Rex.
Well, two things. The maple tree can actually, especially with the speed flow of blood down the air, it can run with the thought of the brain itself or the heart or both in conjunction with each other, down and down, round and round. The blood does flow down and around. One destination, no matter the efforts of flair, that kind of hits the note of bleeding out. And it's all a very familiar sound, the same old tune played over and over. And then the thought that once you accept that, the tortured soul, it turns on itself. So there's that that note of biting into your own mirrored thoughts. But drop that twice, and the carnivorous angle is eating itself, literally. Heart shrivels up, gone any hope of health, or at least life itself, living. Then that thought, was I ever breathless? Because it kind of hints on the note of being on death's door, so to speak. Then that third stanza is the different one. Proficiency grows like a baby's love. Then the opposite, cold love box lashes out. You got the compliant thought of one fighting the other. Poison essence ebbs through arteries and veins, completing their work. So there's that continuing notion of even despite the that first line, the poison still roils through the network itself. And the heart knows how to wound the flail like a priest so devout, true, but it needs the mind to actually work that hard. And that's where the brain comes in, that next sentence. When words internally heard ring so true and so dear, cut so profound. So there's a point there of self-flagellation. Now, the back end, the bottom, the hints on both ends, that kind of hits on that thought up where was it, get on it. Now I lost it. Oh, once accepted to start that second stanza. That kind of hits right there, bringing it back to the second stanza and an ending. Now an end to my wail, my heart is mine enemy. Secrets and truths her cocktail, only my death will I find a remedy. An ending note to giving in to the situation and the realization of that, which is there's no art in itself. It never comes out because you lose no matter what.
I like that. Really great observations, Eric. You know, I'm glad you brought up the first line, which I kind of skipped over, that where it says, tired the maple tree seed, flow of blood down the air. It really does, you know, the maple tree, which, you know, gives so much. It gives, you know, it's sap for maple syrup. It's branches and leaves for shade. You know, there's really just, you know, that really is an important line. And like I said, I'm glad you brought it up because it is that idea of giving too much. I also, as you mentioned, found proficiency grows like a baby's love, really intriguing. And again, another line I'm glad you brought up because to me, it's that whole idea that babies really don't love at first. They need, you know, and then they learn to love over time based on what they're shown that love is. So, I'm actually hoping at some point Lafayette will call in because I know he had said for another show that he was going to call in but didn't get a chance to. So, you know, I'm hoping sometime he'll be able to call in and read his own poetry. So, but you definitely did a wonderful job with that. All right. And mosey on over, grab the next one. And we have shoveling snow in a snowstorm. And checking something. All right. And it goes like this. Since the days of hibernation on this earth, man has dealt with pandemics, the earliest being stupidity, like when brilliant architects hold up construction of the CN Tower, arguing over if the stairs go up or down. There is no vaccine for stupidity. If how we treat the space we rent on Earth was the price we paid for freedom, we would all be living on cell block number 666, because like hurricanes, they hit in the middle of an earthquake. We try infinitely to evenly and delicately slice a wedding cake with a chainsaw. What will it take for us to realize that the wheel was already invented 10,000 years ago and it still has only one purpose, that being to go around in circles? Listen, just because the hamster turns around, that does not mean going forwards. A hamster symbolizes movement, and movement is defined as an organized effort to promote or attain an end. Somebody tell that hamster his end is near. For the cleaning your house while your kids are still grown up is like shoveling snow in a snowstorm. I tend to see cleaning with a toddler in the house as shoveling before the snowplow comes by and pushes all the fucking snow back into your driveway. At 12 of the first cavemen couldn't decide. All 12 of the first cavemen couldn't decide if the zebra was black with white stripes or white with black stripes. They had a majority win clause and kept getting deadlocked. But when the 13th came along and told them it didn't matter, instead of breaking the tie, they clubbed him to death. Humans have never advance beyond the jury of 12. Even Einstein said insanity was doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results, which is always more or less the definition of practicing a musical instrument. Einstein was a skilled violinist. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And Diane took prop 9. We are all so guilty at the way we have allowed the world around us to become more ugly and tasteless every year that we surrender to terror and steep ourselves in it. Which kind of unloads on that thought. It's sarcastic and sardonic. I like that opening angle of like when brilliant architects hold up construction of the CN Tower, arguing over if the stairs go up and down. There is no vaccine for stupidity, definitely. And again, the sarcasm in the next one, end up on cell block 666, because like hurricanes, they hit in the middle of an earthquake. We try infinitely to evenly and delicately slice our wedding cake with a chainsaw. Yeah, that's always a messy situation. Yeah, you can't improve on the wheel because everybody knows what the wheel is for and how it works. It only goes around and around. It has a circular motion for its betterment, for its use, not its betterment. You can't cut off the outside and expect it to run on the spokes because it never works. So you don't improve on something that which works. The idea is if you're going to make an improvement, it's because what is already there is broken and doesn't work. So it's like having shitty diapers running around the house. Meanwhile, you're trying to clean up after the little monster, and it doesn't work. But I do like that last big one, when the 13th caveman along and said it didn't matter whether it was black white stripes or white with black stripes. They just clubbed them to death because they couldn't get a consensus. And it actually is. It's black with white stripes.
Yeah.
Oh. And the end, insanity, was doing the same thing over and over again. That used to be actually what was meant by doing science. You repeated the experiments to get the same quotient to make sure it actually worked in the first place. Now they don't even do that.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, methods are definitely faulty nowadays. That's for sure. I really liked this too. I liked the way you delved into it. I have to agree. I wish Diane had made a SoundCloud. I think this would have been perfect in her voice. But yeah, I understand that doesn't always happen. Sometimes life keeps us busy. This really did have that wonderful, sarcastic, sardonic humor to it. There was great fight in this. I really liked how she had the imagery of evenly and delicately slice a wedding cake with a chainsaw, or as you mentioned, the wheel part is the whole idea of trying to fix something that isn't broken. Like we're spending all this time trying to fix things that aren't broken when we should be trying to fix things that are broken. And I like how she brings up the 12 cavemen and the 13th came along. You know, and to me, what she does really beautifully here is with humor being used, she brings up some serious subjects, like how our idea of justice or our idea of how what we do if people don't agree with us, you know. And by us, I mean the powers that be, obviously not like me and you. It also, that part, the 12 cavemen, reminded me of the movie 12 Angry Men, which I think is absolutely a really awesome movie. Of course, I can totally relate to the idea of cleaning the house with a toddler, and that is the most frustrating thing ever is to snow your driveway so your kid can get to the school bus only to have the plow come by and throw the snow back in there. So definitely I feel that. I feel that frustration. I really like how Diane used humor.
That's why you go outside when the the snow plows coming outside. You stand out there with your snow plow and wait for them to come. That way, when it comes along, you can blow it right back on the truck. Yeah, that's it. Sorry, bastard.
Now, there's a good idea. I like that. But, yeah, I have to say this is a really clever poem by Diane, and I just really, really appreciate it. So very well done. And unfortunately, I've never actually had a snow plow. But thankfully, I have neighbors that do, I've had neighbors that do. All right. So up next, we have Lament of an Easy Man by Pink Fairy Five. And that one is for you, Grex.
Lament of an Easy Man by Pink Fairy Five. Let's have an amicable divorce, she said. I thought she was taking it well. Congratulated myself on not sure what. At least there'll be no problems here, she said. She's even keel, calm, reserved. I feel okay about my affair now. We are still best friends, right? This seemed a bit over the top, but I agreed. Thus, when the Hellcat came to court, snarling, snapping, and screaming, I did not recognize her, nor was I prepared in any way. End poem. And Pink took the number 11. You don't know a woman till you've met her in court.
I like that.
You got this.
First of all, that was a great read. I like that she went with that prompt and that she wrote from the man's perspective. Pink Fairy Five has a real talent for story-style poems that use humor. And I like, you know, it fit really well with your voice, you know, the way you did the kind of the calm read. I don't know if calm is the right word, but, you know, that's all I can think to say. And you just can imagine this guy and his confusion, like, okay, sure, amicable divorce. Sounds good to me. We can, still be friends, absolutely. You know, it seems a bit over the top, but I agreed. I like that line. We are still best friends, right? This seemed a bit over the top, but I agreed. And then the alliteration with snarling, snapping, and screaming. You know, I did not recognize her, nor was I prepared in any way. And I like that it, with humor, she shows us the games that some people play, like to throw people off. They show that side of themselves that is charming and amicable, and they bring out, come into destruction mode. So just a really clever write and very well done.
Yep. Pity the fool who thinks it goes easy when she's being real nice. It don't work that way, asshole. And you deserve this, all of it. Ha. Huh. Amicable? Oh, yeah, that sounds reasonable. Yeah, that should have set off all those alarm bells. No problems? Yeah, that should have set off more alarm bells. We could still be best friends, right? That should have set off the atomic bomb in your mind, you moron.
Well, it's the saying, you know, if a woman says everything's fine, everything is not fine. So, absolutely. Yep, that should have been his first warning right there. You know, awesome comment, Rex. And, all right, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to put your write up and I'm going to play your SoundCloud. And this is Soaking Basilisk by Intimidus Rex. And let's find that. Here we go.
I gave you all that I was, and you took no note of what lay behind my doors of perception. I am the silken basilisk, your lizard king, and you were always their purple monkey dishwashers, sudsed in the arse of naked dreams peeled, then baited with a banana on a stick, prodding that hamster wheel rotisserie pressed to a plunger demigod of brick-walled pandemonium, as those cardboard ejaculations and Eli panty padded felicitations bled off hair-sniffed commonwealth in tufts of pulled bloody pubes. And your squirrel nut zipper prostate is left pissing on goldenrod roads, crumbling through a fingerless voice, while renting cockroach condo filth on the bottom of a pair of $500 Ferragamos, just so you can dine on some rice ball shartings that leave foul a tongue in protein, venerated through your god's puckered bunghole bilge. Your party's over. Yes, it's over. And if you're lucky, you'll meet me on the other side. So break on through, break on through, break, break, break. Well, that stopped.
That was awesome, I tell you, Rex. You know, even when I know there's a serious message behind your poem, I just am so entranced with your voice. And I know it sucks that you only have me to comment, but you just have a downright sexy reading voice. And especially when you're writing to Jim Morrison, I really like how you have all the references to Jim Morrison, like the Doors of Perception, which I also has a reference to William Blake, the Lizard King, Break On Through, Eli Lama Sabachthani, which means, my Lord, why have you forsaken me? I also see that you use Squirrel Mud Zipper from that band that I recommended to you, which, you know, I thought you worked really well into this. First of all, I think I would just absolutely adore to sit in a room and listen to you and Jim Morrison have a discussion. I think this is a poem that he himself would truly admire. So I really like how there's almost a godlike power and confidence in the first couple of stanzas. In fact, two more than that, but you know, it comes across as that idea that I offered you up so much opportunity to see things differently, but you just refuse. You are always their purple monkey dishwasher suds in the arse of naked dreams peeled and baited with a banana on a stick, prodding the hamster wheel of Trishery Press to a plundered demigod of brick wall pandemonium. You know, it's that idea of those people who work up the crowd, who it very much like, you know, it makes me think of, and I know oftentimes I go to the Bible when I'm making comments, and you'll have to kind of forgive me for that, but it makes me think of the crowd who demanded that, and I forget his name, but that the thief, the murderer, be released rather than Christ. And they were given a chance to change their mind, and they just said, nope, release this person instead. This is the person that we want released. Like I said, the Eli is actually my dad's name, but it's also a Hebrew name, of a priest. And as I said, Eli, Lama Sabbatani, means my Lord, why have you forsaken me? So it's always intriguing to me the way you use such that imagery that is both visceral and spiritual at the same time. And I really adore your squirrel nut zipper prosody left pissing on goldenrod rose, crumbling through a fingerless voice while renting cockroach condos fill. I know there's probably a lot of little things I'm missing, which is why I like to delve into your poetry over and over again. But, you know, I get this sense of people using other people for their own sick pleasures, but also for their own idea of going up on the ladder. And I like how in this voice, this, you know, almost God-like voice calls out and says, you know what, your party's over. Your party's over. Your idea of thinking is not only out of date, it's killing humanity. And if you're lucky, you'll meet me on the other side, so break on through. But what's really interesting to me about that ending is these people get called out for the way that they absolutely just destroy the sense of I don't know, love is such a generic word, but the sense of love and humanity. And yet, at the very end, they're given one last chance to really see things with that third eye, to really start seeing things differently. So, as always, I found this just oh, my God, fucking A. Jeez. Oops, sorry. Ah, okay. Jeez, I can't believe I was. God damn it, Rex. I was going through every single fucking.
Well, you did miss one thing. I didn't use Eli to reference God. Eli is the reference to the those Ivy Leaguers. I think Eli's come out of Princeton or somewhere. But it's a reference to those Ivy Leaguers.
Okay. Well, it doesn't. Okay. Well, that's really cool to know. Although I will say that when I share my thoughts, I don't share my thoughts thinking I'm 100% right. I just share my thoughts. And I had gone through, because I wanted to make sure you had such a thorough comment, even if I wasn't 100% right, that I went
pressing them damn buttons.
I'm not anywhere near the buttons. I, honest to goodness, am not. I am, when I am commenting on your poem, I am looking at your poem. And I gave you a damn good comment. But
well, it stopped at the Eli.
Well, all right. You'll just, you
let's
know
move
what you
on.
Have to, you will have to make sure to go back and listen to my comment, okay? But I will wrap this up by saying that, as always, Rex, I do think that you have a beautiful mind. I think you are brilliant, and I'm really glad that you shared this on the show tonight. And was there anything you wanted to say about your poem?
No. It's open to anybody's point. That's all.
All right. Well, I may not have been right in my comments, but I was thorough. So you'll have to go back and listen to it. And then you can tell me what parts I was wrong on. All right. I'm going to go ahead and grab the next one. You should have, and then you'll hear me cussing. I, like, as soon as I suddenly realized that you had dropped, I was like, really? So, all right. So, next up, I'm going to put my poem, which is actually a collaboration I did with Colab, but didn't get done in time for last week's show, which is fine. And we wrote to your the Norman Mailer quotes, poems should be like pins and prick the skin of boredom and leave a glow equal in its pride to the gate of the sadist that stuck the pin in and walked away. And bright was the light of my last martini on my moral horizon. All right. And it goes like this. Born of liquid flame, ego stumbles through a Jezebel street lamp of insurrection, dragged on a leash. Her stiletto heels click along the cobbled stones of insane infatuation. She steals herself for kamikaze consequences, slipping beneath cuticles the white-hot iron of lost identity, drives a hard bargain with a pile of ash. From what seemed a mound of trash, something of worth, recyclable, worms its way, taking on life in another form. And poem.
Great read. Oh. It worms its way well, so you can't tell who did what, which is a good thing, and you shouldn't tell anybody. Let them cobble the sort of who did what. Let's see. I like that sort of pop. Born of liquid fame, ego stumbles through a Jezebel street lamp of insurrection, dragged on a leash. Kind of impressing. A sort of, you drag your ego along on through the red light district, but it's never an easy go through that red light district, and yet you drag it by a leash. It's almost that notation of the ego is doing the dragging, actually. Instead of stumbling, it's dragging you through those Jezebel red light street districts. And again, the letters, heels click along cobblestones, insane infatuation, she steals herself a comic. Again, the sort of ego overwhelming everything to the point where it doesn't matter what the consequences are. That kamikaze hits that notation of splash or die. The white hot iron, that hits definitely with the of ego being so paramount in the moment that you lose yourself because you've got to be that way. There's no contrast. The ego overwhelms in this situation. And with the Martin amount of personal, oh, and the back end kind of hits on that notion that ego is necessary because of the less than self-worth within that that form that one deems himself of. So it reforms itself into something else. And ego is not a pretty thin way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great observations there, Rex. And yeah, I have to say, I really enjoyed writing with Colab. I thought she's very efficient. It actually, like, the only reason this took us a couple days is because we are in such different time zones. It really worked well. And so thank you for the comment. All right. Up next, we have An Amazing Day by Martha Gettle. And we have a SoundCloud for that. So we'll mosey over, and here we go.
An Amazing Day by Martha Gettle. We've been going through the motions. We've been giving in to every emotion. But baby, I hope that you can see. It's time to have an amazing day, you and me. So forget about your worries and your strife. Let's just enjoy the beauties of life. Put your heart above your head and race into this amazing day. because you are so good all the time. Just watching you tires out my mind. But come on now, can't you see how good an amazing day would be? So let's make this an amazing day. Come on in each and every way. We'll find so many things to do in an amazing day for me and you. Because you are so good all the time. Just watching you tires out my mind. But come on now, can't you see how good an amazing day would be? Come on, baby, it's a short way out the door. But do what you've never done before. Can't you see how amazing it would be to spend this day in love, just you and me?
Great read, Martha. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. I think there's one line in here that really, what was it? It's just a short way out the door, but do what you've never done before. It kind of hits on that notion of pass on the mundane and crawl out of our boxes and do something really different, which kind of offers up the notion of an amazing day because it's something very different from before. I could have sworn that's the only. Huh. Yeah, that was the only time. She waited till the last stanza to drop that in. I could have sworn there was another one, but there isn't. Okay. All right, what you got?
Well, I really like how uplifting this is. And as always, a wonderful lyrical quality. We've been going through the motions. We've been giving into every emotion. But, baby, I hope that you can see it's time to have an amazing day, you and me. And I like how, you know, it seems, you know, simple in the idea of just creating one amazing day, but it seems as if it's more about that this day will be amazing because, you know, it's time to stop skirting around the issues and take the relationship one step further. And I do like how she says at the end, come on, babe, it's a short way out the door, but do what you've never done before. Can't you see how amazing it would be to spend the day in love, just you and me? I like how this is the whole idea of stepping out into the adventure of love, but not only the adventure of love, but the, you know, adventure of life, like not keeping yourself inside, but really getting out there and exploring all the beauty that life and love have to offer up. So really just wonderfully uplifting and you know, very well done.
All righty, so where do we go now?
All right, well, Mr. Rexaroni, we are going to read, or I should say you are going to read A Fair Trial by Time Teller.
A Fair Trial, Execution by Time Teller. We will one day be deleted, like these words spelt wrongly on a page. We will one day be forgotten, like these deleted memories from an SD card of family. We will one day lose our place, like this ink smudge dripping up this letter, and perhaps like this footnote or this margin of comment, someone might pay a little attention and score this symphony of philosophy, this memorandum of manifestos, into an indelible mention in history. And if so, we leave the printer with spirit, knowing as we fall to the floor that in these eyes, that was the last thing you saw. And poem. And
great read there, Rex. And in case I haven't mentioned, we have gone on to the rites inspired by the Misty Poets prompts put up.
Perhaps the final hour has come. I have no testament, only a pen. For my mother, I am no hero. In an age without heroes, I just want to be a man. The still horizon divides the ranks of the living and the dead. I can only choose the sky. I will not kneel on the ground, allowing the executionist to look tall, and better to obstruct the wind of freedom. And the star-like bullet holes shall flow, a blood-red dawn.
Great read there, Rex. And yes, that was the prompt poem that Time Teller was inspired by. And I really liked Time Teller's write, how it took on the block form that almost had like a flow of consciousness type feel. And I like how he reminds us right away, like it really grabs your attention and hits hard. We will one day be deleted, like these words felt wrongly on a page. We will one day be forgotten, like these deleted memories from an SD card of family. We will one day lose our place. And to me, I think we will one day lose our place is probably the strongest, one of the strongest lines in here, because it's not just the idea, because the first couple lines is that idea of you know, that we will one day die, that we'll no longer be part of this life, but we will one day lose our place, feels like something that could happen even in life. Like there's this idea of just losing your identity. I also like and score this symphony of philosophy, this memorandum of manifestos, and into an indelible mention in history. I don't know, it's like that whole idea of to pouring out your heart or trying to make an organized philosophy, all, to just have it all thrown away. It's just a wonderful thought-provoking write on what I feel is really about that kind of loss of self, that loss of identity, and very well done.
Oh, it's like that notation to when man is gone, who will be there to read what was left? Will it matter? Will it be objected? Will it have a notation to what we were and who we were? Or will it be just the last thing that one person, that last person saw before they keeled over?
I like that thought. I like that. Yeah, that is so true. You know, when we are gone, who will remember, and will it matter to anybody that we're gone? You know, and that works on an individual level, but also on the level of, you know, humanity itself. So, very cool observation there, Rex. All right. Up next, we have The Better Leash by Orence, and it goes like this. In another life, I was free. In another life, I was lower than a dog. I felt the boot and the lash right into the earth. I knew it intimately. I thanked the gravel for its sturdy sting. I thanked the soil for its grave scent. I thanked the worms for finding me worthy. How glorious was the bloodthirsty mud swallowing sunsets and plum blossoms. In another life, I was free, or so you told me. End of poem.
Great read, Pam. Boy, this kind of hits on the notes of authoritarian totalitarianism. I felt the boot flash right into the earth. Thank the ground for its sturdy sting. I thank the soil for its grave scent. And that offering there, that one, I thank the worms for finding me worthy. It's on the note of being definitely lower than dog, but also lowered into the earth permanently. And there's that note. notation of understanding the true nature of life and finding maybe that note to rebirth, where from when one didn't learn from this life, they are brought back again until they learn the lessons in life before they move on to that next realm of being.
You didn't drop again, did you? Oh.
Huh?
Oh, I thought for a moment you
yes,
dropped,
I dropped again.
It again. Oh, shut up. Yeah, no, I really like what you had to say about the idea of total terrorism. And I liked, well, first of all, congratulations to her on a well-deserved front page pick. I thought, honest, I was really impressed with this write because I felt like it fit, like she didn't put a specific prompt, though I suspect it was written to the one stupid daughter. But I like how with just a few short lines, she takes us back to a time where women were treated lower than dogs. But it can apply not just to women, though, although because she is a woman and because there have been times in history where women were seen as lower than animals, it that's what comes to my mind. But it is that whole idea of someone who doesn't know what true freedom is. And I like how she wraps this poem up. Like, I mean, it's a wonderful poem all the way through and really difficult to separate the lines because they're all really strong and beautiful. But I particularly like thank the soil for its grave scent. I thank the worms for finding me worthy. It's that whole idea of life being so miserable that that thankfulness that when death approaches. I also like how she says, how glorious was the bloodthirsty mud. There's a saying bloodthirsty mud, there's to me a real reference to times of war and battle. And in another life I was free, or so you told me. And to me that's a really powerful line in the idea that people oftentimes don't recognize what true freedom is. People only recognize the freedom that others point out to them and tend to swallow the lies. So definitely a powerful brevity and very well done.
Like Janis Joplin, freedom is just another word with nothing left to lose.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You gotta really dig Janis, that's for sure. All right, let's grab another poem for you to read, Rex. Doo-doo. All right. Up next, we have Knees by Thomas B. And go ahead, Rex.
Knees by Thomas B. Most never think how freedom is earned. We don't have an eagle's wing. We can't begin to conspire with ravens. Perhaps old ladies can plot murder with crows. It isn't given to you. The pretense may be shared. It can be the carrot at the end of the stick. You forget all that taxes your energy. You pay and pay, then pray and pay some more. You can get to vote, pay more taxes, work hard, make others rich. You could do anything if you were not telling yourself how impossible it is, how you need more of this or that or a better religion. Dreams of being lucky are the tools of oppression. Who's free? The hawk in the sky? The hare seeking a place to hide? The turtle could care less about either. As they say, home is where the heart is. Doesn't mean flap those arms till you are safe from harm or care about. And on. All right, what do you got?
All right. Well, I really like this one. There's a great key there. That beginning has that song Fly Like an Eagle going through my head. And what I like is that he not only chose, he wrote the prompt one, but he also mentions some of the thoughts about his poem, like Influenced by Eastern Philosophy, Challenge Democratic Thinking, Comment on Political and Social Issues, Celebrates Concise Thought. I thought that, and write using metaphor and obscure mythological symbols. I thought that was really cool that he brought, mentioned some of that. What I like about this, well, first of all, you know, I like how Tom has this way of delivering, and it seems like an important message about social issues with a light hand and even a bit of humor, like where he says, we can't begin to conspire with ravens. Perhaps old ladies can plot murder with crows. I thought that was really clever there. I like how he says in that second stanza, it isn't given to you. The pretense may be shared. It can be the carrot at the end of the stick, so you forget all the taxes, your energy. You pay and paid and pray and pay some more. You even get to vote, pay more taxes, work hard, make others rich. Again, you know, it feels like that symbolism of the hamster running on the wheel, like doing the same things over and over again, you know, running around in the cage and thinking you're free. I like how near the end it starts to kind of almost feel like he's digging into the realm of an Aesop's fable or Aesop's fable, with the mention of the hare and the rabbit or the tortoise. Dreams of being lucky are the tools of oppression. I think that's just a really important line. And that it just makes me think of playing the lottery over and over again. Flap those arms till you are safe from harm or hare about. You know, it's to me, I think about how people in general, and I think this can also apply to the government speaking to people, but also people speaking to each other, is when you're in a difficult situation, when you are that tortoise laying on your back, and they tell you the best way to help yourself is to simply flap your arms, and you know you're going nowhere. You know nothing is happening. So just a wonderful, thought-provoking write and very well done. And, of course, looking forward to your thoughts, Rex.
I like that thought with murder with crows, the thought of what they are. But also, they could be a horde, a mob, or a muster as well. It's the idea of politics that rolls from there and into the second one. You pay and pray, then pray and pay some more. You even get to vote, pay more tax, work hard, make others rich. The idea is always being under the foot of someone else, even though you're voting for it or supposedly voting for it. You don't actually get to vote on what they pass as laws, taxes, and everything else. The only thing you do is wait till those their term is up and you kick them the hell out. I like the thought in the back end of this too. The turtle could care less about either. True. Home is where the heart is. Doesn't mean to flap those arms till you're safe from harm or hair about. I like that thought with the home is where the heart is, because turtle travels with his home and his heart in the same place. Always has a roof over its head. Doesn't have to worry about bedding down for the night. Just pull everything in, close up shop, and he's home. Everyone else isn't so lucky. They need a place, a hearth, a nest, or a place to call home or pay tribute as home to such. And until we find ourselves with us as our own homes, we can't ever be free.
Bravo, Rex. That was really well said there. Awesome. All right. And up next, I like how, I should say before moving on, I really like how some of these writes have really touched on the idea of what true freedom is and how oftentimes we're tricked into believing something is actual freedom. And up next we have A Lifetime Playing Hangman by Mandy 42. And it goes like this. I'm running from my beginning, my birthbed, a predestination, an alignment of deletions, and maybe the semi-formed scales of a fish spawn to see. I feel like a tadpole sometimes, a muddy emission, hoping the pond doesn't dry up before I get to transform. Land legs for a mermaid's body, odd one out. I'm recycling questions like, is this really it? Should I have found it, experienced it, loved it by now? Is my restless search for relics buried in the periphery of the whirlpool galaxy, mummified with the cats of Bast, or stitched in the gut of a spirit doll? Maybe I'm just as expendable as the rainforest or the caterpillars I tweeze from the underside of my lettuce. Another dead bee colony might be more pivotal than my quest to synchronize symbols, because I can't imagine a life without honey. I've thrown sweet cakes at the maiden, the mother, the crone, but I was born under a balsamic moon, and I've always been dangling from the crescent of too many blank spaces. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Well, I like the questions right in this. It kind of hits on that notion of what are we here for? And, you know, is this really it? Should I have found it, experienced it, loved it by now? The never-ending quest for that which is. And once you find answers to those questions, there are always more that come along. The thought hangman is kind of guessing at the next letter to come along, which kind of hits on the, until you find that little a touch of notation in the rotation. But with this, it kind of hits on that notation of not really experiencing the full configured story of the hangman, of the hangman game itself, but always the ponder. Feels out of place. Tadpole, a muddy emission, hoping the pond it doesn't dry up before I get to transform. Land legs for a mermaid body, odd one out. Out of place, out of the norm. Let's see. I like this thought, mummied with the cats of Bast. It's on the notion of being killed off to be supplied to your master of the day into the afterlife, or stitched in the gut of a spirit doll. I like that too. Kind of that notion of knitted or not stitched dolls to perform magic on that brings pain or something to that whoever that doll represents. I tweeze from the underside of my lettuce. Boy, I kind of, it's on a note of pain being experienced. The dead bee colony kind of hits on the notation of the queen lost in the moment. And the thought of without the queen, the bees won't be making honey. And I did like the end of it too. I was born under a balsamic moon. That kind of hits on a notation of a bittersweet emotions.
Yeah. I have to agree. There's just really a lot of wonderful lines in here, and I like how you brought up the questions and how it gives that idea of searching. And then the title, Lifetime Playing Hangman, and how, you know, life is that guessing game. And, you know, to me there's this kind of sense of, you know, feeling like it feels like that anxiety of guessing something wrong. But just powerful imagery and metaphors. I like how she says, where she mentions land legs for a mermaid body, odd one out. That idea of just not feeling like things fit together. I tweeze from the underside. The rainforest or the caterpillars, I tweeze from the underside of my lettuce. There was that kind of, like, a reference to that kind of pain there, but also that kind of idea of trying to remove the destruction, the sickness. I like what she says, I've thrown sweet cakes to the maiden, the mother, the crone. That actually reminds me of a book that I've seen before. It's written for a young woman, and it gives the idea that within every woman is the maiden, the mother, and the crone. In fact, if I had to guess, I'd say that Mandy 42 probably read that book or something similar to it. And it's that whole thought that we are never just one person at one singular time, but in all of us is that young woman, that mother, and that older woman who can learn from each other. I really like, too, how she said, I was born under a balsamic moon, the idea of referencing, a red moon. There might be more to that, but I really like the phrasing, a balsamic moon. Too many blank spaces. I like how she has all these questions and yet ends with too many blank spaces. Like, I haven't gotten the answers that I've been searching for my whole life. I also really like how she says, because I can't imagine a life without honey. And to me, honey just represents the gifts of life, everything that's good out there. And so I think there's, to me, a real positive note within those lines of no matter how much we struggle to get questions answered, there's still those riches and that beauty of life to be appreciated.
All right, what we got there?
All right, up next we have Playpen Planet by Eric Sensen, and that is yours, Rex.
Wow, that's that fun. That's odd.
Nope.
Playpen Planet by Eric Sensen. Oh, conundrum, shut it again. Oh, conundrum, playpen planet, irresistible blue orb, university campus. Why, in a vast, unfurling universe, did we choose life upon your scoured surface? Third rock from the sun, through the birth canal we come. By birth betrothed to familiar DNA strings and strains. A magpie nation stashes another newborn trinket. Elongated journey of death and taxes begins. Oh, conundrum, playpen planet, blank slate we arrive cleansed of all pre-life memory. Sponge adroit, we soak up all new impressions. Magpie nation we're born into, make sure we're useful in bolts and nuts. Plans, customs, and clowns frown at outsiders. Third rock from the sun, emigrate or immigrate, ties that bind. Jokers, we keenly please, try to appease familial stacked card decks. Hearts, diamonds, clubs, and nifty spades. Magpie nation we're born into owns the right to cast us on its roulette wheel. Oh, conundrum, playpen planet, third rock from the sun. Oft my eyes grow misty, though here senses a far greater ownership. Sprinklings of inklings do drop, crystal clarity calms all alacrity. Universal soul, only loan my spirit to this magpie nation. Have your taxes. But death will jettison my spirit right back into universal soul. Oh, how we'll holler, howl, rollick, and laugh at the absurdity of any magpie nation's trinket ownership by birth. And fun. And he took. Up to talk with the imaginary you. Sunshine, we sit side by side. You hesitate and move away. Our eyes meeting frequently are not free. The bow has been strung, an arrow flies through. All right, what you got?
Well, I really like this. As always, you know, he's just really clever with his use of imagery and metaphors. I like that he calls Earth a playpen planet. And I feel like that this, again, touches on that idea of freedom, because if you think about a baby in a playpen, you know, they're safe. They've got the toys they want. They've got their bottle. You know, they've got their favorite blanket. But, you know, they're not escaping. So it's that whole idea of being treated like babies. I like, by birth, betrothed to familial DNA strings and strain, the magpie nation stashes another newborn trinket. A long day journey of death and taxes begin. I like the reference to a magpie trinket and the idea of, you know, magpies are very attracted to shiny things. There are certain things that they deem worthy of collecting, and certain things they feel should just be discarded. Jokers we keenly please, try to appease familiar stacked cards, decks, hearts, diamonds, clubs, and nifty spades. I like how that references the idea of trying to stack the cards in our favor, and oftentimes trying to stack the cards in our favor. That part there kind of makes me think of the idea of how some people will use their family names to get away with things that people who didn't have a well-off family couldn't, you know, get away with. There's this real sense of inequality. I find it really intriguing that he repeats Magpie Nation a few times. And I like how he mentioned Universal Soul only loaned. You know, that there's this whole idea of this Universal Soul to be taken care of. And we just greedily want to keep it for ourselves. To keep the shiny trinkets for our own greedy desires. So just a wonderful thought-provoking light and very well done.
Nice. Eric Bike on the thought of us being one of those UPCs, you know, Universal Product Code, as we are bought and sold across the board, whether it be for wars waged or just as monetary assignment when it comes to Wall Street marketing and therein. It hits on the Magpie Nation stashes another newborn trinket at the idea of once we are born into that nation, that culture, whatever, we are owned by that. Thereby, we don't have any real freedom because we are traded like common stock. And it goes up and down across the board depending on what's going on. And tax is a part of the back end of that. We pay into the system, yet the system really never does pay into the person itself because, as it says, make sure we're useful nuts and bolts. There's that notation to of being delivered unto a certain position based on who and what you might be and what your net worth is to those that hold the reins of power.
I like that. I like that. Yeah.
All right.
Up next we have Tedious Dilemma by Kel Smiles. And it goes like this. Day in, day out, same. Sleep. Work, eat, out of order, out of no particular border, walk on, walk away, stay, question of the day, answer the payday, all in line, go, 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 push, pull, just get it done, no one is alone, finish first, finish last, finished, no difference made, it's all the same, end poem.
Deep in its simplicity, day in, day out the same, and it hits right back on the thought with the back then. It's all the same, no difference made. It is got that easy notation of, like I just hit on the notion, so Eric sees the same thing. You're just a product. You're just there for whomever needs you for that period, and they hold no weight, no volume to who and what you are. You can be here or not be here. It doesn't matter. The sort of loyalty doesn't work at all anymore. Just get it done.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. I like how you mentioned that, that, you know, loyalty doesn't matter anymore. I thought that was a really important part of your comment, and I thought you made some really great observation. And she actually wrote to the poem Assembly Line by Xu Ting, which, well, actually it's not too long, so I'll go ahead and give this a read. It says, in time's assembly line, night presses against night. We come off the factory night shift in line as we march towards home. Over our heads in a row, the assembly line of stars stretches across the sky. Beside us, little trees stand numb in assembly lines. The stars must be exhausted after thousands of years of journey, which never change. The little trees are all sick, choked on smog and monotony, stripped of their color and shape. It's not hard to feel for them. We share the same tempo and rhythm. Yes, I'm numb to my own existence, as if like the trees and stars, perhaps just out of habit, perhaps just out of sorrow, I'm unable to show concern for my own manufactured fate. And I thought Kel did a really good job of capturing that poem, not only with her imagery, but in the way she formatted her poem. She had very short, impactful lines in a straight row. So not only did you hear in the tone of her write the idea of feeling like just doing the same thing over and over again and standing in that assembly line, but in her chosen format of her poem, that also came through, I think, just really beautifully. I like how she says, questions of the day, answer the payday, all in line, go, 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 push, pull. You know, there's just an idea of really frantic movement, of really trying to be at first across the finish line. And then I like how she says there's no difference made. In the end, it's all the same. In the end, we all die. We're all finished. So I really thought this was a really great write that did a wonderful job of capturing the tone of the prompt poem with Kel's own unique voice. So, very well done. All right. Up next is The Transplant by Robert Polsky. And go ahead, Rex.
Transplant by Robert Polsky. Between north, south, east, and west, twixt two oceans' frontiers, straddling two worlds and two tongues between two deafened ears. Their land of the milk and honey dwells, where language guides fingers to scrawl, block letters for the truth and justice, oppression and lie with the small. No sugar in the promised land, no fortune by snapping fat fingers, not wretched after hot labor hard, every dollar and cent. It is the place where money can hire the devil to do angels' work, for all is measured by how many, round figures with one in front. Cold promises dance in the air, squat in the empty mind, fall into a thousand pieces, wander the streets at night. Butterflies' frozen wings, hopeless fluttering promises, untuned wind violin in strings, mourn on their freckled dust. Thousands lie on the ground, will never land on my wrist, wrapped in an immigrant's blanket, silently weep in the mist. under the sky full of holes, as fallen shooting stars, scattered like the forgotten, life's purgatory scars. I mourn, weep in silence, like a cloud or a tree. Hands touch scathing map at night. I sang on the weeping wall, wild white mountains, swift green, white mountains, swift rivers, green plains. Again, dreams wordlessly crawl. To pack up, set off on the road. Wayne vanished backtrack with no trace. Take the broken branch back to the tree. The butterflies land on the wrist. Peace is born when their wings flutter. And poem.
Great read, Rex.
Mm-hmm.
And this, well, I think this is a really thought-provoking write on the idea of truth and justice, where language guides fingers to scrawl block letters for the truth and justice, oppression and lie with the small, no sugar in the promised land, no fortune by snapping fat fingers. I like that idea, that line, no fortune by snapping fat fingers. It's really intriguing to me. But it's interesting to me because your average man isn't going to get fortune by snapping their fingers. You know, there's no magic. But once you become that rich man, that powerful man, you can snap those fat fingers, you know, and get your way. I like how he touches on a lot of imagery throughout this on the kind of coldness and the cold way people often treat each other. But then he throws in a personal note that really grabs your attention. I mourn weeping silence like a cloud or a tree. I feel like those lines themselves would make a really great prompt for a contest. But what I particularly like about this is, you know, throughout this whole write, he has just brilliant imagery, like butterflies, frozen wings, hopeless fluttering promises, untuned winds, violent strings, mourn on their freckled dust. I just, you know, I adore that imagery. But then he makes us stop and think. He makes us pause when he says, I mourn, weep in silence, like a cloud or a tree. Like, we need to truly realize that this isn't just ugly stuff that's happening, but ugly stuff that pulls at the heart of those who care about people and about the earth. Really just a wonderful, thoughtful line. And I like how he ends with, take the broken branch back to the tree where butterflies land on the wrist. Peace is born when their wings flutter. Such a wonderful symbolism of rebirth. So beautifully written and very well done. And I'm looking forward to your thoughts, as always, Rex.
Kind of hits on a number of notes. There's a thought in here. It hits on no sugar in the promised land, cold promises dance in the air, thousands lie on the ground. Kind of hits on that careful notation of all those things that are promised while getting people to these shores. Yet they don't find those promises even after the trek and the large amount of money and anything else they gave up in getting here. So everything falls a little flat because the streets aren't here. The streets here aren't lined with gold as they've been promised, and nothing is ever for free. That thought with the round figures with one in the front kind of hits on that note of all those people who are making money doing this smuggling with false promises on the cusp of the tongues. Yes, we can make it there. We can make it there. We can make it there. And it doesn't really work that way out.
I like that thought, the whole idea, as you were mentioning, you know, people's idea of how things will work and how they actually work. You know, so very cool. Very cool observation. Do And up next we have Breezeways by Miss Norma St. John. And it goes like this. Shadowing talks of my imagination friendship as I sit on the blackened benchmark in the park, thinking driftwood moments, struggling, intoxicated. Sun rises into sunshine life. Eventide drawings, she sits in my lap, holding thy hand, no hesitation to move her arm from me. His kissing eyes meeting mine in my blue skylights, melted dark and brown, sincerely followed, loved, stands between us and the Lord. He bowed before me to be his loved wife, sunny through our days, but not rusty, dust nights, another hour to give an angel to fly. Mist monitored, he sits and waits for me. A night of sitting stars still sparkles, blaze, shimmering, glistening hours into my wholesome message. Still, amalgamation, whispered cobwebs restored, idyllically, and nirvana, duality definitely descends breathtakingly. Drowned mindset, I, soul's royalty, someday, therefore, loyalty, makes sense, more sense when he becomes a husband. Of his kind petals path of a breezeway of a king to married his mankind, a queen's smile, a crown of a new couple's throne. End poem.
Great read, Pam. This, it's on the thoughts of faith, hope, wanting, imagination. Kind of hits on start out with a blackened benchmark in the park, thinking driftwood moments, struggled, intoxicated. And it kind of opens up with a little bit of darkness there. Sunrise into sunshine life, even tide dawn. She sits in my lap, holding my hand. No hesitation to move her off. And it gets a little... opens up a little more colorfully in that second stanza. Kind of hits on that note of spending this time beneath the stars from evening through until sunrise, noting their conversation and that which may be birthing, hopefully birthing, or wanting to birth. And he hits on that note of be his loved wife, sunny through days, but not rusty dust night, another hour to give an angel to fly. On the sort of, there's a bit of spiritual in this too. Like the old days when you went out, you never went out alone. There was always a someone who was there to supervise. So everything was up and up, so to speak. It kind of walks along that frame. What you got?
I like what you had to say about how you never go out alone. That you know, kind of makes me think of that kind of sense of protectiveness that comes with a partnership. I do agree with you that it starts out kind of dark. I found thinking driftwood moments, struggled, intoxicated, a very intriguing line. Driftwood, of course, makes me think of the idea of just floating out, you know, without... you know, any control of your own in your thoughts. But it also makes me think about, you know, how driftwood is smoothed and shaped and becomes something new because of the waves of the ocean. I like that this went back and forth a bit where, you know, where she starts out, she sits in my lap holding thy hand, no hesitates to move her arm from me. His kissing eyes meeting mine in my blue skylights, melted dark and brown sincerity, he bowed before me. Now there's this real sense of the intimate communication between a man and a woman. And I like how there's kind of the whispered cobwebs kind of takes a dark tone too. But I like how, as you mentioned, there is a kind of spirituality to it. And of his kind petals pass a breezeway of a king to marry his mankind, a queen smile, crown of a new couple's throne. I like how there's this kind of extended metaphor that, you know, on the whole idea of two people lost and floating, you know, out in the ocean, but when they come together, they're not just one strong, they're strong individuals, but they're a strong couple. You know, there's this real kind of idea that a partnership isn't just the romantic moments, but rather it is the moments where you build strength for and from each other. So, excellent write and very well done. Did you drop?
Yep.
Oh, darn. all right. For the last poem of the night, I am going to put up a 20-word poem that I wrote for a contest that I kind of feel fits with some of the theme of tonight. And you are actually going to read it.
Dust and stone. A divine dance arousing dust and stones. The old lions long to be caged. Freedom's a bitch without rallying perverse bloodlust.
Awesome.
That's a little on the short side.
Yeah, well, the contest was you had to write to the prompt gladiators in 20 words or less. So, of course, I used all 20. So, what do you think? Oh, geez. All right. Let's go ahead and get him back on the show. So, here we go.
You really got to stop doing that.
Oh, come on now. I know you jumped out the window just so you wouldn't have to comment on my poem.
I was busy talking, and no one was there. And I looked, and I was still on the phone. But then it went. Bye-bye.
Oh, man. Well, I tell you, it is honestly, though, in all seriousness, it is not me. It is a studio issue, most likely, but definitely not
me. Uh-huh.
I'm not doing these shows by myself. Trust me. I am not throwing you off.
Even the cat here is anyway. Not the old lion yet. She don't believe it.
All right. So tell me your comment.
What's his name? You went with Gladiator. What's his name from that movie? Oh, crap.
Yeah, no, Gladiator was the prompt, but I know what you're talking about. Oh, and I can't think. He's Australian. He's an Australian actor.
That's what that last little thing hit. Freedom's a bitch, rallying perverse bloodlust. Yeah, even though he was free to begin with up until then, but old lions long to be caged. Not really. Old lions usually want to go out tooth and nail. And dust and stones are civilization.
Well, I was using that line in the idea that I guess it would depend on how you look at it, but to me it was that whole idea that, you know, the thought that, you know, freedom's a bitch, and so, you know, that within the cage there's that safety, and that the kind of just wanting the idea of the mind that has gotten so used to the cage that any other way of life just seems wrong.
Russell Crowe.
Yes, yes, that was it. Yes, Russell Crowe. But yeah, the actual prompt for the contest was the word gladiators. So.
And what's his name?
All
right. Joaquin Phoenix, who played the Roman dictator at the time. What's his face? What the hell was his
name? Yeah, he's a really good actor, Joaquin Phoenix.
Well, the guy who played was an actual Roman dictator at one point.
Oh, wow.
Who actually did go into the ring and do games, but he always rigged the games like he did with Russell Crowe by puncturing his lung with that sharp knife before he went out. And eventually
get
cut down, but not in the ring. I think he got cut down by his own soldiers because he was such a rat bastard.
Dang. Yeah, that was a really good movie, I have to say. Yeah.
What was his name? Damn it. That doesn't bother me. Commodus. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're actually down to a couple minutes, and I this has been a really awesome show, but I do want to make sure to mention some contests that need rights. Fill My Eyes is running a contest, The Magic of Kindness, for tonight's 10 p.m. Twisted Tuesdays. I'm running a contest for Friday's Break On Through, Bob Dylan's Issus. I'm running a contest for The Art of Seduction, which is Bold and Confident is the theme. All of those need rights. Also for Thursday's Double Helix, Duke of St. Paul, Dex Bailey, is running a contest on mind games. The topic is mind games. And Rex, you have a contest up for Rhythm and Rhyme. And tell us about that.
It is from, it's called From Wednesbury to Detroit is All a Matter of Blues. That for Joanne Shaw Taylor, been touted as the new queen for the blues. She's got a voice very much like Janis Joplin, earthy, and she plays a very mean guitar when it comes to the blues itself.
Absolutely. I have to say, bravo to you for that choice. She has an amazing voice. I'm really looking forward to that show and the rights inspired by her music. So, awesome show tonight, Rex, and have a good night.
Good night, and thank you very much.